Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Democratic gubernatorial debate on education issues. I'm Lisa Sylvester from WPXI-TV. WPXI, PCNC, and WESA are proud to broadcast the debate from Pittsburgh Obama Academy, a public school here in the East Liberty neighborhood of Pittsburgh. This is a condensed version of a previously aired debate. I would like to thank our co-hosts who organized the debate, the Pennsylvania Interfaith Impact Network, which represents 50 congregations of all faiths, and Yinzercation, a collective of parents, teachers, students, and community members. We welcome four candidates to the Democratic gubernatorial debate: Treasurer Rob McCord, former Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection Katie McGinty, Representative Allison Schwartz, who represents Pennsylvania's 13th District, and Mr. Tom Wolf, a businessman and former State Revenue Secretary. These candidates will face each other in the primary election on May 20th, and the winner will then face the Republican nominee for governor in the fall. The community submitted questions ahead of the debate, and we have also been collecting questions from our audience. We have a community panel with us here tonight that will ask those questions. Allow me to introduce the Reverend Richard Freeman, president of the Pennsylvania Interfaith Impact Network, Ms. Casey Schaefer, a Pittsburgh public school parent and community activist, and Mr. Joel Macklin, a junior here at Pittsburgh Obama. Each candidate will have 1 minute to answer the question, with the possibility of a 30-second rebuttal or follow-up at my discretion, and candidates will have 1 minute each for a closing statement. We want to begin with Reverend Freeman, who will ask Mr. McCord the first question.
Like the rest of Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Southwest Pennsylvania has suffered from deep state cuts in public education in the past 3 years. Students have fewer teachers, fewer education programs such as arts and language, and are sitting in larger classes. In each of your education platforms, you propose to restore those cuts when you become governor. Pittsburgh students Jordan Daniel and Vikas wrote to ask, how would you pay for it?
Thank you so much. I love this question. And before everybody sort of dozes off, I'll point out that a lot of people like to say, oh, substantively, they're all pretty much alike, etc. But the fact is, there is a big, big difference when it comes to education, and it cuts to the funding question. The biggest issue is funding public education. The biggest question is, are we going to elect a governor who will force the drilling fracking industry to pay its full fair share so that we can fund public education? Or are we going to keep giving away the store as Governor Corbett has? I'm the only one running for governor who's proposed a 10% driller's tax that will allow us to protect the environment and fully fund our schools, early childhood learning, K through 12, and higher education. You need to find the resources to do that. The fact is, others have put forth proposals, all the others running, that would leave, including, of course, Tom Corbett, that would leave hundreds of millions of dollars in the driller's pockets. That's wrong. It's bad for Pennsylvania. And I will fight and I will win for you.
Well, thanks very much and good evening. I don't think anybody here is going to be asleep tonight. Listen, education is priority number one, and in fact, all of us would tax those drillers to make them pay their fair share so our kids aren't left behind. Now, if we're getting into the game, I'm the only one, it is true that I'm the only one that would dedicate penny for penny, dollar for dollar, billion for billion to public education. Two reasons why that's important. One, there's not enough money to go around. Tom Corbett has dug such a deep hole for our kids in public education. We need every penny, not for infrastructure, not for the million other priorities, for education, and I would dedicate penny for penny. Here's the second reason, though. We're going to need to build a political consensus to get it done. Unless you dedicate penny for penny and say it's for education, you can't build those troops that are needed. Every penny for education, and we'll win. Thank you.
Well, good evening. I'm delighted to be here. There is no more important issue for us to be talking about in this race for governor than education. One of the reasons I am running for governor is because of Tom Corbett's failed leadership on education. He's failed in other ways as well, but we cannot grow the state, we cannot grow the economy, we cannot help our children succeed unless we fund public education. And there's no one on the stage who has more of a record of accomplishment or experience on education than I do. And I want to bring that experience of getting a fair funding formula done, first under Governor Casey and next under Governor Rendell. I was Democratic chair of that education committee, and I fought for full-day kindergarten. I fought to make sure that all of our schools, all of our children, had a fair, quality education. That's what I'm going to do as governor, and you can count on it.
Hi, I'm Tom Wolf. It's wonderful to be here, and I really appreciate having this chance to talk about nothing but education. There are two things, actually three things that I would do to restore the funding cuts that have been made, and then promote funding, I think, that we actually need to more funding for public education. First thing is we need to shift priorities away from charter schools, failing charter schools that are not doing what they should be doing. Auditor General Jack Wagner, when he was still Auditor General, said we have $300 to $400 million that is being siphoned off the public education system by that alone. If we go to a 5% severance tax, we do it responsibly from an environmental point of view. One estimate is that could produce another $700 million, a lot of which could go into public education. Those two things alone could do a lot to restore the cuts to funding. Final thing is we need to move away from a heavy reliance on the local property tax, move to a much broader state-based tax to fund public education. I think that would create the support we need. Thank you.
I do have a follow-up question because I think this issue is so important when it gets to the issue of funding. And I know that all of you have publicly said that you support some kind of a tax on natural gas drilling. What happens, though, if the environmentalists win the day and fracking is stopped? What is your plan then for funding? Because when you read, and I've read your education proposals, it all seems to be based on finding this extra education money from taxing natural gas. So what is the backup plan then, Mr. McCord?
First of all, I want to be clear, follow the numbers. 10% beats 5% by hundreds of millions of dollars. We're talking about $1.63 billion in year one, climbing to $3 billion over time. And we need that to invest in the right way. Second, when it talks to build, you're talking about building the consensus. The consensus is emerging around allowing much, much safer fracking, but fully funding education, but also continuing to have steep investments in environmental protection, or you won't get the driller's tax through. So you need to have environmental protection. Finally, we have innovations and reforms, including with Medicaid and procurement, that will save more than $500 million, and we can plug other tax loopholes for more than another $500 million. But we'll get this 10% driller's tax. Watch us.
Well, thanks. I think it is a critical question because you want to have a plan B and C because education is such a top priority. I've also proposed that we need very significantly to reform our charter schools, including especially transparency and accounting. There's 50-some million dollars out of Pittsburgh public schools every year that are transferred to charter schools. We need to know that those dollars are going to the highest and best purposes. Second, if you look at things like we're the only state in the nation that doesn't tax things like tobacco and smokeless tobacco and cigars. That too, $100 million, put it together, a recipe for success for education in Pennsylvania.
First of all, I would not concede that we can't get an extraction tax done. And secondly, I would keep, I think the McCord proposal, I would keep the impact fee, which is a little over 2%, so the local communities can be restored and be able to get some of the revenue from those energy companies. But Pennsylvanians agree that we need to do this extraction tax. 5% is reasonable. It's what Virginia does. When you add in the impact fee, which I would keep, it's like Texas and Oklahoma. It's fair. The energy companies expect to do it. And yes, there are other revenues to be had. I have been on the budget committee on the federal level. I have to tell you, it's a question of priorities. It's a question of determination. And as your governor, I'm going to be determined to get those dollars into our public schools.
I also refuse to accept the idea that the majority of Pennsylvanians who support an extraction tax are going to be overturned by the state legislature. I think we can get this done. But if we can't, in a $29 billion general fund budget, surely there are things that we could ways we could reprioritize things to make sure that we have the money for this most important thing that we do in this state, public education.
I'm going to ask Cassie Schaefer now to ask the next question. Ms. McGinty.
Pittsburgh student Jonah notes that Pennsylvania is currently one of only three states that does not have a funding formula for distributing state education money to local school districts. What would an adequate and equitable public school funding formula look like under your administration?
Thank you, Cassie, and that is an excellent question. Listen, under Tom Corbett, public education funding has become a backroom political deal, right, where you have kids who happen to be represented by a legislator who has political muscle, winds up for that reason having a better education than somebody who doesn't. That's not fair. Listen, we are one of the only states in the country that does not have a fair, objective, and transparent funding formula. And it wasn't always this way. We had that kind of objective and fair formula before Tom Corbett. He made it a matter of political deal-making. I would reverse that, put back in place a process that is open, that recognizes especially our school districts that need a special helping hand. Why? Because they're giving a hand up to kids who don't have a lot of excess income around the house, or kids who are language challenged, or kids that have special challenges. That's where our special priority should be. Tom Corbett has left them behind. I would put them first.
As you heard me say before, I have actually worked on a fair funding formula for the state, first with Governor Casey, when the issue really was our rural school districts. They were spending so little per student, there was no way they could provide quality education. We set a floor. I worked on that funding formula. Under Governor Rendell, we updated it, and I put in worked and pushed to put in funding, reimbursement to our school districts for full-day kindergarten. You know what? Tom Corbett has reversed that. Not only has he walked away from a fair funding formula, he has actually also stopped reimbursing full-day kindergarten. And kids across the state are seeing less opportunity to go to school ready to learn, to be able to succeed in first, second, third grade, and to be able to be successful students. So I'll work on a funding formula. It won't be the first time. I'll know what I'm supposed to do. I know how we'll work with our communities, school districts across the state. And I'll tell you, under Tom Corbett, we have seen a drop in the average percentage. Average percentage now has gone down to 35-34%. It should be about 50%. That's the statewide average. Poorer school districts should get more. We all know that.
Look, one of the tragedies of Pennsylvania is that we don't have a fair funding formula. We are one of the few states in the country without one. But even if we had one, I'm not sure we would adequately fund it. We have to take into account the special challenges each school district faces and make sure that we're funding according to those challenges rather than according to some, as someone said, political expediency. We need to make sure that our children, wherever they are, whichever zip code they come from, are getting a good education. That's a constitutional guarantee in Pennsylvania. We need to follow through with it, and we need to follow through on it with a fair funding formula that we fund fully. Thank you.
Look, this isn't just a constitutional mandate, and it's not just about fairness. We talk about a fair funding formula. It's an investment formula. When we do this right, investments in education pay for themselves again and again. What do we recognize in the formula? Poverty rates, what they call tax effort rates, special need rates. The investment return in investing in education in poorer communities and things like summer programs, after-school programs, tutoring programs, early childhood learning is much higher than in a lot of the other school districts. Our investment formula will recognize that. Further, a difference between me and my friend Tom, I would take the abuses of charter school funding and I would recognize that we've got to stop paying these rip-off cyber schools, we've got to stop paying them for pensions they don't provide, got to stop paying for lunches they don't provide. And what we'll do is provide the partial reimbursement of $224 million that Tom Corbett ripped us off in his first year of office. That's where that money will go. Thank you.
All right, Joelle, you may take the next question, and we'll start with Ms. Schwartz.
Research shows that learning in early childhood is particularly harmed by factors such as poverty, nutrition, lack of access to quality pre-K, and adult literacy at the home. What will you do to support our youngest learners?
It's an important question, and as I've said, it is absolutely clear that we not only need a fair funding formula, but we need to make smart investments. The smartest investment we can make is helping children start school ready to learn. So we need quality preschool, and I've worked on that as a state senator, something called Keystone Stars. We're known nationally for our quality, not just additional slots, but quality childcare. We know what a difference that makes. Again, full-day kindergarten makes a big difference. It's smart investments. The return is about $7 for every $1. I've done that before. It's outrageous that this governor has taken that away and is not being smart with our public taxpayer dollars. I'm going to use some of those extraction tax dollars to make that investment in preschool and make sure that every child in the state has access to four-year-old universal pre-K, and that's going to do as your next governor.
Early childhood education is a huge thing. When I was active in the United Way in York County, one of the things the United Way did was in York County was actually focus on early childhood education. That's a really important investment and probably as important as anything we've done in the public education field. We need to figure out a way to get children right from the start of life to be able to get to school ready to learn. So we have a big challenge there, I think, in a way that we haven't since the early 20th century when we created the high school movement. We need to go back and look at how we're going to add the 4 years of early childhood to our education system and make sure everybody gets to kindergarten ready to learn. We need to restore what I think was started in the Rendell administration, bringing Department of Public Welfare and the Department of Education together to make sure that the silos that prohibit us from thinking clearly and originally about these things go by the wayside, and we actually have the money to invest. We have the people and the ideas coming together to make sure that we have an early childhood education strategy.
Again, this isn't just about a wish list. It's about finding the revenues and the resources to make the investments that matter. That's why 10% is so much more important than 5%, and earmarking the ripoff money that's now going in a misguided way to charter schools and earmarking them for better charters and for the partial reimbursement. Early childhood learning, we've specifically talked about putting $220 million. Only one other candidate's talked about a number. That was $80 million. We need to address the need for learning not just in full-day kindergarten, but in pre-K across Pennsylvania. I agree with you on that cause. And addressing the need for learning before the age of four, especially in poor communities where many children are deprived of access to the vocabulary words that enrich them, drive up the probability that they won't need remedial education that costs up to $3,700 a year, and drive up the probability that they graduate from high school. We could, over time, by investing $220 million a year now, save $3 billion a year down the road. That's why we're so excited about investing in early childhood learning.
I want to start with a shout out to all of those who are working hard every day at Tender Care Preschool, which I had the privilege of visiting today. And I learned a lot there, not only seeing again the beautiful little spirits that we are entrusted with nurturing, but only one in six kids in Pennsylvania today have access to high-quality pre-K. Every bit of that is wrong and needs to be turned around. Second thing, so many families fully fall through the cracks, not able to have any assist in order to ensure that their kids have high-quality pre-K. And you know, at a time when Tom Corbett wants to say, well, we're going to put work requirements before you get any benefit. How can you go to work if your children don't have a safe, high-quality place to be? That's wrong. My proposal would restore Tom Corbett's cuts and increase above by 22%. Let's give our kids the best.
Reverend Freeman has the next question to Mr. Wolf.
This region has several high-performing brick-and-mortar charter schools, as well as some of the lowest-performing, and the numbers are growing. Some have criticized these schools for a lack of transparency, accountability, and an equitable funding formula. What is your stance on charter schools?
My stance on charter reform is clear. It's in my paper, my prospectus on education and policy. We need to reform our charter schools. There are some good ones and there are some bad ones. We're in an international baccalaureate school. Here in York County, we have an international baccalaureate school that is the product of the merger of three public school districts. It is a charter school, and it seems to be working. But what we need to do, even in the good charter schools, is make sure that we're funding them fairly and that we're holding them accountable. Right now, we're not holding charter schools accountable at all. We're usually, when local school districts have the responsibility for overseeing them, they aren't given the adequate funding for doing that. And for cyber charter schools that are being overseen at the state level, they're not being overseen at all. In terms of funding, we have an average funding formula that takes headcount from the host school to the school where they're going. That's unfair because actually it's the marginal cost rather than the average cost that schools are bearing, the burden that they're bearing. So we need to figure out how to fund our schools fairly with a marginal costing formula rather than average cost, and we need to make sure that we hold all charter schools accountable to the same standards we're holding public schools to.
The short answer is mend, don't end when it comes to charter schools. We need to make sure that when we're funding innovation, we have real transparency and accountability, and we're not balancing the books on the back of the poor children who are left behind in public schools. That's why we need to do things like check cyber schools and make sure that we continue partial reimbursement for charter schools, for all the hardworking education professionals, the kids and the families that depend on things like music education and after-school tutoring and smaller class sizes. So it starts with the funding formula and accountability, but also with continuous improvement. There's some good charter schools out there, the evidence suggests, with schools like Mastery and KIPP, and yet there are good, important questions. With Mastery, the ability to finish college after the highly disciplined approach. We need to ask the questions lovingly with these innovators and engage in continuous improvement without defunding public education. Tax the drillers, not public education.
You know, charters started out as an inspiration of teachers who wanted to see if there's innovation that they could bring in their passion to teach our kids. And now it's being used as a weapon to make teachers out to be public enemy. You know, as a mom with three kids in public school, I honor and revere our teachers. What does it mean for charters? I'll stand for those charters that are delivering for our kids. If, and only if, we're talking about a fair and transparent, accurate funding formula. I will not send a single taxpayer dollar to a for-profit operated charter. And as it relates to the cybers, again, as a mom who knows the importance of socialization, et cetera, I'm really skeptical. $400 million? I think there are exceptions, but I am very skeptical and I would take a wary eye.
Charter schools have, no question, been a financial burden on our public school systems pretty much everywhere, certainly in Philadelphia, certainly here in Pittsburgh. And when you see that on top of the cuts that have come from Tom Corbett, it's a real challenge. What I would do on charter schools is pretty straightforward. As I said, I would not let any taxpayer dollars go to cyber charters and use that $336 million for our public schools. That's number one. Two, I would expect and demand accountability from our charter schools. There are some good ones. There are some mediocre ones, and there's some really terrible ones. And there's some that are real ripoffs. And we ought to close the ones that are ripoffs, and we ought to close the ones that are not performing well, and we should do that through performance reviews and financial audits, and to make sure that we don't send any public dollars to a failing school, a failing charter school, and that's what I would do. And in that way, we can start to bring the confidence back and the dollars back and the students back to public education, and have charter schools be a part of public education, the ones that work, the ones that are willing to be accountable, not the others, and that's what I would do as your governor.
Cassie has the next question, and that is going to Mr. McCord.
There is a lot of debate about the value of Common Core standards, and some states are not adopting them. Under your administration, would the Commonwealth continue to implement the Common Core standards?
Two quick points. One of the sad things with the cyber schools, I visit school after school where the principals and the superintendents and the teachers talk about kids leaving when they've been truant for 19 days. They pretend they're going to a cyber school. They drag money out with them. They leave for a year and they're a year behind. When it comes to this, we need to have basic accountability. Stop doing quite so much teaching to the test. I've seen 9-year-olds being nervous about their PSSAs. Katie and I have talked about how kids are spending 2 months testing. You're going to see in the high schools, kids tested almost to death here. So whatever the core curriculum is, we need to involve the education support professionals, the educators, and the parents to have a reasonable approach instead of constantly forcing people to march to the drummer of the testing industry.
The answer for me is I would take a big time out You know, I think there's so many things that had maybe good ideas and good intentions behind them. But we have piled on and piled on and piled on. And it's like the old song that every problem is a nail and every solution is a hammer. And so the solution now is another test and another rigid set of expectations. There might be very good ideas in Common Core, but again, I'll tell you, seeing my three girls, one of my twins who's in eighth grade, will sit through literally 8 weeks of standardized tests this year. During that time, there's no homework, there's no extracurricular projects, and before that time, we know they're teaching to that test. We can't afford that time. We're talking about the dollars and cents we can't afford to lose from public education. I don't think we can afford to lose the spark, the heart, the spirit, the energy of a teacher who wants to teach. You know, I think we need to get out of the way. Thanks.
As Governor, I would continue the Common Core curriculum. This has been just beginning. I think we have to not keep changing the expectations for teachers and students. This has been something that's been developed across the country. It's always nerve-wracking to start something new, but a lot of thought has gone into this. I'm sure changes have to be made, but we can't keep changing, which means why we should keep the Common Core curriculum. And it is not exactly tied to the testing as been suggested, but I certainly will say that there is too much testing. I've heard it from parents, I've heard it from students, I've certainly heard it from teachers. And I have the Pittsburgh teachers, the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers support. I'm thrilled by that. I do understand, and we've talked about this, how to make sure that teachers can teach, teachers can have the support of the state. And look, whatever the curriculum is, we need to be absolutely clear that teachers and students have the resources that they need to succeed. And that does mean not only the Common Core, but it does actually mean that we need to maintain music and art. And yes, recess and some of the other very, very important aspects that where kids can thrive. So this is about teachers being able to teach. It's about students being able to learn. And tests have to be only done when they are useful to either accountability or to helping teachers be able to do a better job.
We need to stop confusing accountability and continuous improvement with teaching to the test. That's what we have to stop doing. My two daughters went to the local public schools in York County and got great education without any of their teachers teaching to any test. Do they have accountability? Absolutely. Teachers have had accountability forever. We need to get away from the top-down model that we've gotten with Common Core and get back to the idea, I mean, my company, I have done continual improvement throughout my career, and the place I start is in the front lines. The place I would start with an accountable, quality education system is where we always have to start, and that is in the classroom with the teachers who are so dedicated to what they're doing and who know what we need. That's what we need. Thank you.
The question that I have then is, as governor, would you support getting rid of the Keystone graduation tests? If you can just respond briefly, we'll start with Ms. Schwartzkin.
No, I don't think so. And I say that with some hesitation because I don't know that it'll be popular in this room. But the fact is that we do need to make sure that graduation from high school and that high school diploma means something. And it should be consistent because it is a way for us to make sure that that student, that it means something for that student who goes out into the workplace. It means something if that student goes on to post-secondary education. I do think it should not be the only criteria. I think that's really important. It needs to be a fair test. It needs to not be the only criteria. You need to look at the performance record as well. It shouldn't be the only thing that matters. And it could be teacher evaluations as well. So, but it could be part of what we do to make sure that our schools are doing all that it should for all of our students. And so I would look at keeping them.
Whether we like it or not, we do have common standards. If you want to go to Pitt or Penn State or CMU, there are common standards. Doesn't matter where you're from, where you went to school. We have to acknowledge that. The question is not, do we need common standards? It is, as Allison said, can we do it fairly? Can we do these standards? Can we come up with them in a way that actually measures the right things and measures these things fairly and comes from the classroom rather than from somewhere out in netherworld? We need common standards. We need to understand and respect and understand that we have accountability. We have things that are being done in our schools that we approve of. We have to know that things are being done right. And so I would be for improving our standards, the Keystone in Pennsylvania, but I would not be for keeping exactly the way it is.
I'd scrap them.
There's never a time when my kids bring their report card home and the only thing that counts is one test that they have taken. And this should not be the only thing that accounts as to whether or not a child has a bright future and has a shot at that piece of the American dream that they deserve. Look, we got to do better by our kids. And you bet a teacher's evaluation has to count. And you bet, you know, for a kid who struggles to hear, to listen, to understand as quickly as other kids, but works hard, that has to count. You know, how many books have been written now that say grit is the real key to success in life? Why would we give that zero value then for our kids and say, you had the flu? Tough, you're done. It's a piece, but we have way magnified it. Let's get common sense and the other key pieces back. Let's really know our kids and know how they can shine.
We'll continue on here. The next question will be coming from the Reverend Freeman, and the next question goes to Ms. Schwartz.
We've heard from several students, including Luca, Joshua, and Zakiah, expressing concern about safety, violence, and school climate. But these students also worry about strict disciplinary policies such as zero tolerance, which can unfairly criminalize minor offenses. How would you balance these concerns?
Very good question, and I thank you for asking that, because I do know that I hear from parents and as well that they, one of the reasons they choose charter schools, for example, is concern about safety in public schools. No student can learn, no teacher can teach in a school that doesn't feel safe. So we need to figure this out. We need to make sure that schools are safe places for everyone who's there, and there's work we can do that's been done. But I do understand that we've gone overboard on some of these zero tolerance, and there's some really pretty unpleasant stories about little six-year-olds who bring, I don't know, little scissors or something and then get suspended or sent off to another alternative school. That's not right either. Look, let's use our common sense about this. We need to be able to give our schools some discretion. We need to be able to let them know what the parameters are. And at the same time, while we want kids to be safe, we also want not to be completely ridiculous about how we actually sort of make young children feel that they've made a huge mistake. They can have big ramifications for themselves when, in fact, that was not what was intended. It didn't do any harm. And in fact, everyone was safe. So let's be reasonable about this as parents, as a community, and certainly as governor, I hope I would be as well.
Kids can't learn in unsafe environments. We have got to make sure our schools are safe. I mean, I think we cannot compromise on that. We have to have due process. We have to implement that fairly. But in the end, our schools have to be safe havens where people can come and learn in safety. If we don't do that, if we cannot deliver on that basic fundamental promise in a fair way, but if we can't deliver on that fundamental promise, education cannot take place. So we have to find that balance, yes. We have to do it fairly, but the priority is to make our schools safe.
I'll pick up on a couple of words from my colleagues. Representative Schwartz talked about discretion. I think that's the key here. Usually when people talk about zero tolerance, it's an excuse for avoiding careful thinking. You know, it's sort of saying, let's you and him fight. The fact is we have great professionals on the ground, educational support professionals and educators on the ground who can help reason through what's a real risk to security in the schools, which is the highest priority, and what isn't. And the other word was one that Katie McGinty used, grit. I was one of those kids who would have been washed out, never would have had a shot at Harvard if I had been compelled to take all these high-stakes tests. They would have ruined me. The kind of grit that my mom showed when she moved to Pennsylvania for public education, the kind of grit that my teachers showed when they took on undiagnosed dyslexia and pulled me out of the slow reading group to send me to Harvard, that's the kind of thing we want to reward, and at the very least, we want to allow it with what professional discretion.
You know, we have to provide a safe and nurturing environment for our kids. That's a top priority. We share it. But let's also put the spotlight on our teachers as well, right? Teachers are professionals. Most could be making a lot more in the private sector. God bless them for dedicating themselves to our kids. We need a safe environment. Now, that means we need tools. We haven't talked yet about two things that are critical. One, Tom Corbett eviscerated not only the basic education subsidy, but also the dollars for special needs kids. Those dollars need to be restored. And second, behavioral health, mental health. Those dollars have also been stripped, and our teachers and our kids in the schools are bearing some of the burden of that. Now, the governor would say, well, I was just consolidating programs. Well, maybe, but a major cut under that roll-up we can see, you know, 35% of schools have had to cut these behavioral health programs. 45% say they're about to have to. We got to give schools and teachers the tools to provide that safe and nurturing environment.
Our next question, Cassie will ask our next question, and we are going to begin with Mr. Wolf.
Students Scott, Sean, and many others are concerned about equity. We know that across the Commonwealth, students of color do not have the same access to educational opportunities, such as AP courses, gifted programs, international baccalaureate programs, and quite simply, the best schools. How would your administration address this inequity?
Thank you. That's a great question. I think we do have a problem in that this constitutional obligation we have to provide a thorough and efficient education to all children in the Commonwealth, regardless of their zip code, we're just not following through on that. So that you're right. Depending on where you live, who your parents are, what your neighborhood looks like, you might not get a good education. We have to change that. One of the reasons, actually the main reason, I want to move from a heavy reliance on local property taxes to a much broader tax base with the state system, the state tax system, with a 50-50 split rather than the 66-68% local funding, 32-34% state funding right now. A 50-50 average split would, I think, go a long way toward addressing those inequities that exist between zip codes. We need to get to the point where every child in every school, regardless of where they come from, regardless of where they live, regardless of who their parents are, have an equal shot at a great education in Pennsylvania.
I'm proud not to be a career politician, to have sort of a blended career, and I don't like it when somebody pretends, you know, elect me and pigs will fly, you know, everything will be perfect. The fact is, unequal access to education is the core problem in Pennsylvania public policy. Yes, we need a full and fair funding formula, not just at close to 50-50, but that addresses the acute issues that can arise under conditions of poverty, that can arise when English is a second language and students are commuting in and out of the country, that can arise when you have special needs. So it's also, the devil really is in the details to approaching equal opportunity. But our highest priority first has to be getting the revenue. Again, with the 10% driller's tax, full tax reform, and innovations, we need to get at the poorer communities first, invest fully, and then when we bring those resources to the picnic, we have room for expansive innovation and to let people know about all the opportunities that are available to them, including, under my administration, expanded grants for middle-class students who want to go to higher education through FIA grants and other approaches. Thank you.
There's power in this issue. It's a constitutional right. So we have to do things like adequately fund our schools and through a fair funding formula. Absolutely vital. But if that's all we do, it's not enough. We know what that backroom deal is looking like right now. If you're a child who is an English language learner in Reading today, the state somehow thinks you need an extra $350 to have a fair shot. But for some bizarre reason, if you're that same child and you happen to live in Allentown, the state today under Tom Corbett's budget will give you $4,000. And what's the story there other than raw political deal and raw deal for our kids? But I also want to give a shout out to the A-plus organization. This goes deep. It's about keeping teachers, retaining teachers in school that have experience. If we don't, our kids suffer. It's about counselors in school. If the school doesn't have counselors, our kids suffer. Equity has many dimensions to it, and we have to make sure we're delivering across the board for all of our kids.
I know that the others on the stage really addressed this answer to this question was about a fair funding formula. And of course, it does come down to resources and making sure we have the resources. But I think your question was a little bit different than that. I think your question was actually about the really extraordinary differences across the different school districts. There are 500 school districts in this state, and they are extremely different. One of them has, you know, the biggest has 200,000 students, and one of the smallest is actually in my congressional district in Jenkintown, which is, I don't know, less than 1,000 for sure. So they are going to have different opportunities potentially. So what the governor has to do when we're looking at what has to happen, not only on the formula and the distribution of the dollars, but what has to be taught, what has to be available, what makes a difference in kids' lives. And that should be set by the state, and it should be a requirement of what has to be provided. But I also think that we also have to encourage smaller school districts in particular to talk to each other, to share with each other, to be able to have AP classes. Maybe you can go to the different school district. I know a school in Philadelphia that lets you take community college courses as a senior, as AP courses. There are things we can do in this state. I do remember years ago as a state senator and the Democratic chair of the Education Committee going to Everett, Pennsylvania. I don't know if you've ever been to Everett, Pennsylvania. Remember, because that was my dad's name. And they had such creative tele-learning and physics teacher.
We're out of time.
It's really interesting, important work that we can do, and we can be creative.
We need to
wrap it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joelle Macklin will have the next question, and we will start with Mr. McCord.
Students such as Charlie and Zoe are concerned about teacher evaluations. What do you think are the best ways to evaluate and support our teachers?
Thanks. Lisa has a good voice of God, so I'm a little scared of going over time here. The fact is you want a blended approach. One of the core problems with the teach to the test problem is teachers have been held accountable, and even more important, whole school funding has been held accountable for what they're talking about, the gap assessment. Now, that makes some sense. Even if you're low down, we're going to encourage you to do a little better next year. But if you have a 50% rotation in terms of who's actually in your class and no control over truancy or population rotation, that's a wildly misguided standard. So you don't just want to have assessments based on tests, although you could have partial assessment based on tests. And I believe PSEA, the union movement, said we're fine with having partial assessment. Peer review ought to be substantially added to student review. There's a lot of great evidence that teachers need more time to help each other and to watch themselves on camera, and they will continuously improve. You know why? Because they want to. Thank you.
You know, context matters. And so to hold a teacher accountable to the same performance measures and metrics and statistics that's teaching in a very much impoverished school district as compared to one that is teaching kids who have the best of everything and lead a very affluent life, well, clearly that's going to give us a very distorted picture as to which teachers are making a difference. We ought to be looking at the context. That brings up, I think, what Rob said too, peer evaluation. Teachers who also know what it is to work in that particular district to lend insight and help us understand. But third and most importantly, I'd say, let's invest in our teachers. Technology changes, the world changes, it's a dynamic place, and yet we do so little to give teachers the opportunity to continuously improve their skill sets. If you look at the latest international tests, when China ate our lunch, surprise, what's one of the things China does? Invest in skill developments of their dedicated teachers. We should too.
You know, there's very little that you can say what makes a real difference in people's lives, but teachers do. And our respect for teachers, our understanding of how hard it is, imagine, to stand up in front of a classroom for hours and hours and to do so much of that alone without the support, and to do it year after year. So great admiration to the teachers in the audience, and certainly as a parent of two Philadelphia Public Schools graduates, understand some of the great teachers that they had and their commitment to public school education. So what we need to do is to help our teachers have the resources, the tools, the team teaching, the expectations, and the understanding that it can't just be about this class, this time. It has to be built on what are their expectations and how you can actually move forward. I think peer evaluation is really important. Again, team teaching can work, but making sure they have the resources. And it is usually about not comparing schools to schools as much as year to year, and do understanding that it's not teachers alone that educate our kids. There are other professionals in that school environment that have to help as well. And without those extra counselors or social workers or nurses and feeding our kids, then teachers can't teach either, and we ought to take that into account.
That's a really important question. I mean, how are we going to evaluate our teachers? My two daughters went to public schools. As I said, there was really very little question about who the good teachers were and who the not-so-good teachers were. All the other teachers knew that. The parents knew that. The administrators knew that. We have a system. I think we can put into place a good system, a regular system for looking at our teachers, just as we do in any organization. It has to be a frequent review. Peer review sounds really good. I think we have to have good leadership in each of our schools. Our principals have to be people who are dedicated to teaching, to education, rather than just building maintenance. And I think if we do this kind of thing, sit down and say, are we delivering on the promise of a good education in each of our classrooms? Are our teachers doing a good job? We'll figure out, we'll be able to know who the good teachers are and who aren't. We have to take this seriously.
All right, we have time for one last question, and so we will ask Reverend Freeman to begin with Mr. McCord.
As one who has been fortunate and blessed to graduate three kids from college, my oldest started when I was a young kid, and I was told to be prepared to pay $140,000 to send him to school. It cost $200,000. Now we are here with public education, public institutions here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania who are seeing their funding shrink, like the University of Pittsburgh. We've had a question coming from PXI viewer Andy asking the question, where do you stand on public funding of public higher education?
I'm strongly, strongly in favor of public funding of higher education. And, of course, we need to be thinking about needs-based grants. I'm better off. I had a good career in business. I should not need the help of grants. I'm very proud of the work we did in Treasury. We fully repaired the college savings program, a $400 million problem. We've allowed growth, 11% a year annualized growth in saving in advance on a tax advantage basis for you, for people like you. And we help people find need-based grants, which are growing at a lot of the better schools out there. But we need a state school system that has as its highest priority providing high-quality, affordable higher education. And we need to make college in community colleges very attractive. And we need to be investing in public-private programs so that we can have specialized approaches that lead directly to jobs and that allow people to be certain they can finish in 4 years and get a job at the end of those four years. Together, we can increase college affordability and increase employability at the end of the bridge that we build with higher education.
You know, we've all done a good job of beating back on Tom Corbett's new math, where his $1 billion in cuts to K through 12 somehow is an increase in funding. But we have to put the spotlight here as well, Reverend. Tom Corbett proposed a 50% cut in the funding of our public colleges and universities. He added to that wound a massive cut in the grants available through FEA, 32%. The legislature backed him off on some of that, but it amounted to about a 50% cut in the resources available. Today, only 20% of middle-income families get any support at all. What's the upshot? statistics we don't want. We want to be number one in good things like jobs and opportunities, but we're number one in some of the most expensive public education in the world, third in the debt burden that our kids carry forward. I would turn that completely around. I've proposed new middle-income grant programs and a Dream Scholarship program so that 70% of Pennsylvania's families can support their kids in getting the education that they need.
This is an issue that is important to the state of our economy. It's making sure that our kids can go to college, and I would work to make sure that they would be able to afford college without great debt. This is actually not just a public policy issue for me. It is also a personal one. My mother was an immigrant to this country. She came at the age of 16, essentially an orphan. She came alone. And she was sent to Philadelphia because that had a great public school for her to go to. So she went as a senior to girls' high. And she was smart enough, and she wanted to go to college, and she got into a variety of colleges, and she started out at Temple University because it was the most affordable place to go, and she never finished. She ran out of money. And it did limit her options, and she always felt badly about that. And so I understand very keenly, because my mom said, go to college and get a career and be able to do what I wasn't able to do, and I did. But I want for every child, like my mother, who was able to go to college, smart enough to go to college, started out to be able to finish. And I also have a plan as governor to make sure that kids could afford to go to college and the state would help them do that.
Okay, let me point out, I'd like to make a clarification. Just for the record, I am firmly in favor of recess. I just want to make sure I'm clear here. Okay, what was the question on higher education. We have got to make higher education accessible in the same way we want to make early childhood education accessible, the way we want to keep K through 12 education accessible and high quality. We have got to do this. In this 21st century economy, we cannot afford to have people who do not have access to higher education, and I mean through graduate school. If we don't do this, it can distort our choices and it can distort our economy. Look at healthcare. People who go to medical school have to take out so much in terms of debt to pay for their tuition, that we have not enough primary care physicians because primary care physicians aren't paid as much as specialists. People come out of medical school, they have to go into specialties in order to pay for their medical school debt. That's just one example of how limited access to higher education in all its forms really distorts our economy and our society. We have got to work on that as governor. I will do everything in my power to make sure that a higher education in this state is accessible and affordable. Thank you.
All right. We are running out of time quickly. So, Ms. McGinty, your closing statement for 1 minute.
Well, I want to thank you all for being here tonight and the sponsors for putting a spotlight on what is the most critical issue and opportunity that we can all focus on. Listen, my own story is one of where I got a chance at the age of 29 to work for the President of the United States of America, even though I was the first in my family to go to four-year college right out of high school. It was all about education. Every child deserves that shot. Some numbers go together. The numbers that go together in our state today, we are now 48th in the country in job creation. We were 7th. Recently, and we have slashed education just about more than any other state. But our commitment is to turn those numbers around, invest in our kids, invest in our teachers, and you know what? We will leave other states in the dust in terms of jobs, vitality, growth. Pennsylvania's best days are ahead, and it starts with your passion, your commitment, and our shared determination that our schools will be the best. Thank you very much.
You know, you heard a lot of agreement tonight on this stage. That's a good thing. We all actually believe in education. We all think education mattered to us. We all think Tom Corbett did a really terrible job in hurting public education. But what's different, and I want you to know this, is that I bring a record of experience and a record of accomplishment in getting things done and making education a priority. No one else on the stage can say this. I've worked on that full-day kindergarten. I worked on fair funding formulas. I've gotten it done. Then you know you can count on me to not just talk about it, not just be able to even put out a plan, but to know that education will be my highest priority as your governor. That's what the state needs. That's what you want. That's what you deserve. If Pennsylvania is going to grow as an economy, if we're going to be the strongest state we possibly can be, we must fund public education. And you deserve a governor who's done it. And that's the kind of governor I want to be. And I hope I have your support. Help make it happen. We can win this election. We can beat Tom Corbett. We can make public education
Time's
matter
up.
Again.
Thank you very much for having us all here. This is such an important topic. And I'm going to repeat what I said earlier. This is about a public good. This is not a private good. We're all here in support of education because it really matters to all of us. And it's a public good because we all share in the responsibility for delivering on the promise in the Constitution that we're going to have a good education for all of our children, regardless of who they are, where they live, where they're from. You care about the education my two children got in York County, Pennsylvania. And I care about the education the children here in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County and all throughout the state get wherever they go to school, because my life is enriched if they get a good education. By the same token, if they do not get a good education, my life is diminished. We all share in the responsibility for funding public education because we all share in the benefits if it works. And we all share in the consequences of an education system that does not deliver on the promise we make. This is important. This has to be a priority of whomever the next governor of Pennsylvania is. It's going to be one of my biggest priorities, and it's that important. Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks to Lisa. Thanks to our panel. Thanks to all of you for your patient attention. Listen, this is about a track record. It's about motivation, and it's about direction. My motivation includes the fact that Pennsylvania public education rescued me. It rescued me, and my mom had the common sense to make that the highest priority. I also am lucky in terms of a track record. I haven't just talked about education. I came to office shortly after 2008 when I was elected, pretty challenging time. I worked with the public unions asking for real sacrifices in benefit structures that saved more than $30 billion in pension fund money. Unlike Tom Corbett's false pension reform, we really saved public money while protecting seniors now and in the future. We fully repaired the college savings program, a $400 million problem. We did the right thing again and again. But guess what? I'll drill this home. You will not get this done unless you get a governor who gets you a fair deal from the drillers. Vote for the 10% tax on frackers. Vote for McCord. Thank you.
I want to thank everyone. I'd like to thank our audience, our distinguished panelists, as well as the candidates for their time, their presence. I think that today has been very informative. And we'll end now by saying, remember to vote on May 20th.
Thank you for joining us for this special Election 2014 presentation from the WESA Newsroom. Democratic gubernatorial candidates Tom Wolf, Elshin Schwartz, Katie McGinty, and Rob McCord debated on the topic of education Tuesday, May 8th at the Obama Academy in East Liberty. This hour-long presentation will be archived at our website, wesa.fm.